Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The War Room, the interview series brought to you as part of the Clone Star Pod. I'm your host, Mike Overton, and joining me in the co-host seat this week is the wonderful Joseph Hurley. How are you, sir?
Hi, Mike. Welcome. Why did I say welcome? I'm not welcoming anybody. I'm just the co-host of this situation. Oh, my God. I've stuffed my lines. The interview is falling apart as badly as Bill's body is disappearing behind his jacket.
We're keeping this in. So our guest this week is an incredible model maker, ship designer, illustrator for the Ships of the Line calendar, and he helped design the Enterprise G and the Titan A. Of course, it's Bill Krause. Bill, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's a wonderful to be here.
Good. So, going to start things off at the beginning. Growing up, what was your inspiration? What inspired you in sort of the terms of books, TV shows, movies, that kind of thing?
Growing up in the early 70s, we didn't have much except the original Star Trek and syndication. Right. So that was my first, I think, introduction to sci-fi. Was Star Trek on television and syndication. And eventually, the late 70s, Battlestar Galactica and Star Wars hit and exploded from there. But that was my first inspiration as a kid, was early Star Trek.
And so Star Trek has always been an inspiration then for you?
Yeah, awesome. Always a fan.
And Bill, was it your family who were into it, or did you yourself just kind of pick it up from watching, say, reruns on TV, or how did it come about?
It was just me and my friends and neighbors who were get into that as a kid. But my parents were not into it, and my dad wasn't really a Star Trek fan until much later. My dad, I don't think he understood my interest in it, but eventually I think he grew to appreciate it. It was purely my own decision making.
Goes well. No. So, what was your sort of, to taking that on a little bit? What was your dream job growing up?
I had a lot of career options. I think I wanted to be a bionic doctor of engineering. I wanted to be the $6 million scientist. I wanted to be Dr. Rudy Wells to build bionic arms and legs. For some reason. I don't know why. And my dad was an engineer, so I had some of that engineering influence. And then I wanted to be an Air Force test pilot. And then I wanted to be an engineer. And I actually went into college to become an aerospace engineering major. And that then transitioned into photography and cinema, a long way of getting around, to what I like to do was, film and make movies of my models in my basement as a kid, and being inspired by, I think, ILM and Star Wars when that was a thing. And I just thought that was a hobby for me when I first started doing that in my basement, making movies in Super 8 of spaceships blowing up. And then didn't really think of that as a career until I got into college and realized that I don't like engineering at all, other than just designing, the finished ship. But to work in draftsman, working on little tiny widgets and parts that would make like a part of a landing gear, it's like, this is boring. I want to design the whole thing. So I kind of rethought my career choice at that point and went back to, what can I make photography and cinema, a career? And it did. And I did that for 40 years and just recently retired a year ago. And now I'm back into my hobby again, making models of things that had inspired me as a little kid.
And Bill, when you were younger then, in terms of, say, what you're saying about model ships and things like that, when do you remember when you first started getting the Star Trek sets in terms of the AMT sets of the models and things like that?
Yeah, the very first AMT model kit that came out back in the mid 70s. That was, I think, one of my first model kits that I picked up and started to build before the Star Wars stuff came out. But and then the motion picture came out, and then that model, the refit, was a wonderful thing that I built. And then I got into college and got married and had kids and didn't really have time for building models until about maybe 10 years ago, and got back into the hobby at that point and started, had all this pent up design angst and creative juices that were like ready to go. And once my kids graduated high school and college, I had little to do with them. So I was more my time, free time to dive into the world of Star Trek again for me.
And like, is the one that kind of stands out most in your memory of all those model kits that you would have played, would it be built and things like that? would it be the first one you got as the one that stands out the most, or is there another one that you say that was the one that really fired the imagination?
I think what really got me going was being able to design my own thing, being inspired by the Star Trek ships, and then taking that example, like I think the Reliant kind of first, when I first saw it, I go, oh, they're taking parts of the Enterprise and making another ship. Because all we ever saw was just the Enterprise. I go, wait a minute, there's another fleet out there that don't all look like the Enterprise. It can be other ships. So I thought, oh, so I took the motion picture Enterprise kit, and I made my own design using parts of that kit and kind of cobbled together a kind of a version of the Reliant, but it didn't have the roll bar on it. And this was probably like in the early to mid 1980s. And I still have that. Actually, I sold it, but that kind of got me in the path of like, oh, I can be designing ships that fit the universe, but aren't the Enterprise. And that spawned a whole, you know, creative path for me to be designing ships for the TOS era and movie era and beyond, but not the Enterprise. That was my whole mantra, was let's not build the Enterprise over and over and over again. You can only build the Enterprise, you know, how many times? And it's like, okay, it's another Enterprise, but what's the rest of the fleet look like? And that was, I was more interested in expanding the horizons in all directions rather than spilling the same ship over and over and over again. So the Reliant, I think, sparked that for me.
And over the years then, Bill, did you ever say to yourself, I'm going to get the kids into Star Trek, I'm going to buy an AMT kit, and I'm going to build it with them to show them what it was like when I was growing up? Or did you say, no, they're not going to buy this, no way, I'll just leave it off?
Yeah, the kids didn't really, I think, appreciate Star Trek the way I did. So my son's really into Star Wars back in the early 2000s. So we were really into Lego. And that really got him interested into building. I couldn't get him in model building, but he really liked Lego building because he can do that immediately. Didn't require any tools or glues. It was just started assembling things and creating things really on the fly and on the floor of your living room. And he was really into Star Wars. So we concentrated a lot on building a lot of different types of Star Wars universe ships. And I think I tried to build some Star Trek ships, but it's hard to do that in Lego.
It's a bit blocky, isn't it, Lego? I mean, most Starfleet ships are kind of, they're slightly curvy and they're kind of organic. And then there's Lego that's, you know, trying to put a square brick in a round hole. It's just...
Right, you can't put round saucers or nacelles from Lego too easily.
Not unless it's massive and you've got a way of kind of fracturing it up a little bit. Right. So keeping on that theme, what is your favorite period of Star Trek ships? Is it TOS? Is it TNG? Is it something in between?
Yeah, it's definitely TOS and the motion picture era. And for me, it's the era that's unseen. It's between those two eras that I seem to kind of concentrate on a lot, where there's like this blending between TOS and the motion picture. And I wanted to see ships that might have been built and developed in that between time.
Yeah.
Because we see the Enterprise in the motion or the TV series, and then we see the one from the motion picture. That's a big leap in technology. And it's like they just didn't one day say, oh, we're gonna have this ship as the new design. It's like, well, they had to have gradual steps to get there. And those are the things I like to kind of explore. So my ships will kind of have a blend of both, like a little hybrid of ships that are kind of been designed and developed and then built in the interim between when their Enterprise was first built, let's say before Captain April and Pike and Kirk. You know, that ship was designed and built back, say, the 2240s. But there are ships being built and designed by Starfleet year after year after year between then. But they might be a little bit more advanced than when they first built the Enterprise, so that you're going to see probably a little changes in warp drive or whatever, and different hull shapes. So those are things I'd like to explore in that era. But I've done some stuff that on paper, and another lost art, like between the motion picture and like TNG. So there's another 50, 60 years of stuff that can happen that, you know, I haven't scratched the surface yet, but that's next.
Actually, Bill, question for you then. So obviously, you know, growing up, you would have been a Star Trek fan. You were interested in the ships and the AMT sets and all that. What was it like for you to go and see the motion picture on the big screen and seeing the Enterprise for the first time in a cinema screen and being a completely updated version? Because obviously for a lot of us, like I'm too young to remember, but I was born in 82, so I missed out on it and things like that. But what was it like for you to say, I've seen it on TV, it was, you know, just a normal kind of model. And then you see this absolutely ridiculous, ginormous ship on the big screen with Jerry Goldsmith's incredible score. How did that scene kind of, you know, land for you?
I mean, that was probably the landmark moment of my life. It's like a life-changing thing. You see this blurry, out of focus plastic ship fly by on Star Trek on TV, and then you see it on a, you know, a motion picture screen with the score like you're talking about, and the detail in that model, it just made it real. I mean, it was so authentic and genuine. It's like, oh my God, this is what it should look like if you were really, you know, really there. And so it was like, at that moment, it was like, well, I was, you know, forever a Star Trek fan. I think if I wasn't before then, I was totally after that. yeah, it was a life-changing moment, I think, when seeing that in the theater, for sure. Yeah,
same for me for Generations. I remember seeing Generations in the cinema. And before then, it was always, you know, VHSs that had been overdubbed 1,000 times with other episodes. So the quality was absolute trash. But yeah, going from sort of seeing on that tiny little, those tiny little CRT TVs to the massive cinema screen. Yeah. Now I fully appreciate that one.
And Bill, you said there you kind of took a break from all the model kind of work for a long time when you had family and all that kind of thing. But like... One of the things I think is interesting about you so far and what you've said is that it's almost like you live out a fantasy a lot of us have, in terms of we all played with the models when we were kids. We all kind of created stories in our own heads that kind of went along with them and things like that. And you brought it back then a couple of years ago and you decided, I'm going to go back to this. I'm going to start doing my designs again and things like that. What was kind of, was it just the kind of case of this is a hobby I really enjoy and I missed it for so many years and I want to get back into it?
Yeah, it was really, a way of getting back in the hobby, and being such a fan of Star Trek that, you know, I had a lot of model kits kind of been piling up as I've been, you know, collecting them and not really building them, but, just seeing a lot of fan work being done in design and people building things. And I had done a lot of Star Wars stuff and a lot of other genres, and I built ships and airplanes and tanks and all that kind of stuff, but I kept going back to Star Trek and wanted to do something original, not just build a kit. So when I first got in the hobby, back into the hobby in like 2014, I had this Enterprise, motion picture Enterprise, sitting on my bench for probably 15, 20 years. It was put together, but unpainted. So I thought, I've seen guys doing these Aztec paint jobs on these things. I'm going to try just for fun to see how this works. And I bought this an Aztec paint kit, like a masking kit. So I did this, and I called it Ticonderoga, so it wasn't another Enterprise. And then I was like, oh, this turned out okay. Let's see what else I can do with it. So I had more parts laying on my desk of another motion picture kit. And I thought, I'll sketch some ideas and just build something totally different, something wild. And I built the Shangri-La just without blueprints, just kind of threw it together. And as I was... kind of created as I went along, and then eventually this becomes the Titan and Enterprise G. But back in 2014 was just a fun scratch build to get back in the hobby, and I had amazing where it's gone since then. But that's so
was Shangri-La the first one that you kind of designed your own for? Mm-hmm. And then obviously from that, that's obviously then expanded into the Excalibur. You've got the Javelin shuttlecraft. How many have you done now? Is it 7 or 8, or is it more? Am I missing a few?
Oh, I mean, original designs?
Yeah.
I think if I go back chronologically, it was the Shangri-La and Wasp that I did back-to-back, almost simultaneously. And then they were both smaller, like 1.537 scale. They're based on the refit model kit.
Yep.
So they're about 22 inches long. And then... when round two produced the 1.350 scale models, I thought, oh, I should upscale that. So I bought some of the TOS and refit 1.350 scale model kits, and because I can light them. And then I thought, well, I'm not going to build just the Enterprise. So I built the Sentinel, which was a light cruiser of my own design. It was a TOS version, but all I used was, I think, the bridge dome. The rest was all completely hand fabricated or 3D printed. And then I built the hood, which is a modified TOS Enterprise and 1.350. The Repulse, which was another TOS era, like a twin engine, sort of like a Reliant, but a TOS heavy destroyer. And then the Javelin shuttlecraft, which was a 1.24 scale.
Which is my one of my take favorites.
On my take on a TOS shuttlecraft. That was all scratch built out of styrene. Then I got big, and then I built a 4 foot long 1/350 scale Endurance, which was completely hand fabricated and partially printed.
I have to say, the Endurance is probably my favorite one. Then it's the Javelin after that. That the model for the Endurance is just absolutely incredible.
Oh, thank you.
Especially, I know on your Instagram, there's those close-up shots of the Passard collectors. They are absolutely stunning.
My little Fabergé eggs.
That's the only way I could describe it, yeah.
Right. And I reused that idea in the Excalibur, which I just finished this past year, which is another 1/350 scale alternate take on a hot rod enterprise. Because a client who asked for it, he wanted the hood, so he wants something that's similar to the hood, but different. So it's another road taken using the kind of ideas, alternate ideas on the Enterprise. So there's a lot you can do with it. And but there's maybe 7 or 8 original designs that I've done. And I've done a lot of smaller versions of them as well. But and then the Radiant, which I did for Picard Season 2, which is the 4-engine TOS predecessor to the Stargazer. You only see it for a second in Season 2, but I'm working on now for another client, a large, I'm not sure what scale, but it's going to be probably about a 3 foot long version of that with lights. That's currently in progress.
And Bill, when you got back into all this back in 2014, did you have any plan for it? Or was it just, I'm just enjoying this. This is just a really enjoyable hobby. Or did you say, I think there's something I can actually do with this. I think I can actually make a contribution somewhere with this.
When I started back in the hobby, I was actually inspired by some friends who were also model makers in the Star Trek, and they were going to this hobby show in Kentucky every year called Wonderfest. And I thought, oh, that'd be kind of fun to go to, you know, see other people's models and contribute to that. So that became like the inspiration and impetus every year was to build something new for that show. It was held annually in like June. So I always knew I had like, a year to build something for that show. I was still working full time. So this was a hobby for me. And I really wasn't really interested in doing much more with other than just going to the show and displaying myself and seeing other people's things. And eventually got picked up by Doug Drexler, who saw I was posting these photos of my models that I had composited into star fields and backgrounds. And he invited me to contribute to the Ships of the Line calendar shortly after I did the Shangri-La and the Wasp. It's probably like 2015 or 16. And so that became like an exercise gig. Oh, this is kind of fun. I build a model that goes to the show and then I'll composite it for the calendar every year. And it became like a regular gig. And then I retired a year ago. But for like the last 5 years, I've been doing this kind of like professionally, almost full time, either for clients or for companies as a prototype for their models or the trade show display pieces and things like that.
And yeah, Bill, when you went to Wonderfest all those years, was there ever a piece that anybody else had that you looked at and you were going, I wish I had designed that myself?
All of them. you go to the show just, full of ideas and coming back with like even more ideas of what to do next, because you're just always inspired by those who create all around you. So I'm always looking online and looking for things to, borrow from, but I'm always inspired by people's work everywhere I go.
And when you've done the Ships of the Line, which is your favorite entry that you've put in of all of the ones you've done?
Oh, wow.
Not that I'm putting you on the spot, Bill, but I'm absolutely putting you on the spot with this question.
Yeah, I never really thought about one that I like a lot, because I put as much work as I can in each one of them. And I think what I do is okay, but I'm always intimidated by all the others who have done other pieces for the calendar, because they're all done digitally and they're all just beautiful, just intricate. You can look at it like with a magnifying lens and see every bolt and nut on all these models. I'm like, I want to hold mine back way back here, because you can see every scratch and fleck of dust on it, because they're models, they're photograph models. And I can't get that kind of detail that these 3D guys can get, but I'm always intimidated, like, gosh, I hate to be in this calendar because I feel like I'm just not worthy to be included, but always thrilled to be asked.
Sorry, Mike, go on ahead.
Go on, you go first.
No, no, no. I've asked about 27 okay. questions to build there in a row.
Okay, so
favorite one though, probably the endurance.
The endurance.
Ah, okay.
Which actually is in two calendars.
Okay, I'm now going to go hunting for those calendars.
Yeah, we need to find that actually. Yeah, it seems what it is.
Because I have ordered this, next year's Ships of the Line.
It's in that one.
Oh, even better then. I was annoyed to find out that February, which is my birth month, is a Romulan warbird, which I was a bit meh about. And my partner, who's not a Trekkie at all, he's got the Enterprise, which I thought was a bit off. So we'll have to have words at some point. But so what's your process then? So you want to come up with a new ship design. Do you sit down, do you sketch stuff first? Do you then, you know, create a 3D model? Or do you just sort of just get into it, build it out of styrene? Or, yeah, so what's your kind of process?
Yeah, it depends on the project. Sometimes I like to just sit down and I want to build something right now, and I don't care to even do any kind of concept. I just want to scratch build something for fun to see where it goes. And those end up never turning out as well because they're not as thought out as well. When I design on paper first, you sketch it out and you kind of get your proportions down right. And then if you move to 3D, then you can start moving that sketch around in all dimensions and see how things fit together and change the scale and proportion of the cells and hulls and how far they are apart from each other and look at it from all angles. When you start building something right away, you don't have that ability to see what it looks like ahead of time. You're kind of just making up as you go along. If you get lucky, you're lucky, but that doesn't always happen as well as you think it will. So I like to work on paper and then go to digital. And then from that, it's then printed either in part or whole. But I'll also print out full size plans, full scale plans. So I have that as reference on the bench when I start assembling it. Because I have to build like an armature for it,
yep.
Like a metal brass structure. And I need those plans to make sure that it's going to fit inside the model. So I have to have a physical piece of paper so I know, you know, I can lay that out on the paper. And then while it's being printed, I could be building the armature. And once that's resin, it all goes together, hopefully, to plan.
So do you print in resin or do you print in PLA?
Typically resin, because I get a much finer detail.
Yep. I'm only asking because I'm going to be investing in a 3D printer at some point.
Yeah. I never PLA because it's like, well, if you want a dog toy, that's great. But if I'm building a studio scale model, I don't want to be sanding all this detail off, you know.
Yeah.
So it's always done the resin.
And Bill, in terms of say, then just onto Mike's question there, like obviously, if you're just sitting down, I'm going to build something straight away, that's fine. But if you decide to plan it out, obviously, look, I know every ship is going to be different. The situation is going to be relative. What's the normal time scale you have kind of from the idea to sit down, I'm going to build it. What's the normal length of time it takes you to do it end to end, say?
When I was doing for Wonderfest, I knew I had a year.
Year, yeah.
But that was a luxury back then. When now I'm working for clients and I got a backlog of projects. And so things have to happen a little quicker. Depends on the client if they're, you know, they feel that pressure into time and they give me the kind of luxury of spending more time, but then that backs everything else up. So there's a process and I want to spend it no more than, I shouldn't say no more, I want to put any limits on myself, but yeah, design takes as long as design takes to get there. It could, you know, a week to a month to 2 months. To get to where you like it, and you have to like it before you commit to print. There are things you can change along the way, small details here and there, even after it's printed. But there's about maybe a month or two of development time, maybe less than that. Depends on how much time you want to give it. I don't want to spend forever on something. I'm not going to be like George Lucas and just, you know, keep improving upon it. Time and time again. At some point you can say it's good enough, you got to go in production and get it done. And then after that, it can go anywhere from, you know, a month to 2 to 4 months to 6 months to build the thing, depending on the complexity of the lighting and all that stuff and paintwork. And yeah, it's time consuming.
Obviously, we don't want any of your clients who are watching this at the moment to come and say, wait a second, Bill told me it was going to take a lot less than that. And Bill, yeah. When you're designing then, when you're kind of drawing things like that, do you say, like, throw on episodes, you watch movies, you refer to old technical manuals or things like that? What do you kind of use as your inspiration? Or do you just simply sit down yourself and say, I've done this so many times, I know how to do it? Or what reference material do you go to?
Yeah, again, it depends on what it is I'm tasked to build and design. But I have a huge library of reference material of stuff that just influences me. It doesn't have to be Starship. It can be any kind of transportation inspiration, design inspiration, whether it's automotive or aerospace or nautical or, you know, whatever. It can be a blender. It's like, well, that's a great shape. You know, you never know until you see it. And I go, and you know, I just keep these catalogs of reference folders of things that I like. I saw someone else, a good reference for me for designing impulse engines or taillights of cars. Has there ever been in a lot of traffic and you're looking at taillights of all sorts of cars? Like, that's a great impulse engine. That's a great impulse engine. And that's all I see is red things, and that they look like impulse engines. So I've got probably thousands of photographs of back ends of cars just for the taillights or just for impulse engine.
Like what you're saying there is like, listen to say when Ben Burtt was talking about doing all his sound design, and it was just basically every single sound he'd hear, he just recorded because he was there. At some point, I'd be able to use this
right.
in something.
Never throw anything away. And there might be concepts I'll design for a ship that never go that way. I have, like, as I'm designing things in 3D, I may be tweaking certain things or changing an engine out to see where that might go. But I keep everything. And so I've got like concept A through F over here and then from G through Z over here. And maybe concept M is the one I go with. But even off of that, it might branch off into 15 different variations. And I'll keep catalogs of various components that I've built in like a library of pre-built components that they can use again somewhere else rather than starting from scratch on the next project. The previous project might have inspired 15 different designs of a ship that I even considered. So I'm always creating and being inspired by things, and never throw it away. You can always find a way of reusing it or be inspired by it to create the next thing rather than starting from scratch again.
And just then, Bill, I suppose one question for you, I'd just be curious your opinion on this. So you grew up in the era of models, of practical effects and things like that. And we've moved now into CGI, which is always getting better and things like that. But to you, does the CGI ever fully replaced models in terms of, look at, say, the Enterprise from the motion picture, how detailed, how magnificent that looked compared to all the CGI. Do you think CGI can give you that same feeling as seeing an actual practical model?
Well, I think as far as cinematically, I mean, it's the most cost-effective way of doing that anymore, because the detail that you can put into a CG model at the level you can, as opposed to a physical model, is just, you can't match that. I mean, if you want to do a pan out from, let's say, the beacon on the ship and pull all the way out to a full wide shot of the model or the spaceship, you only do that with CGI. You couldn't do it with a physical model because you couldn't get that large unless you built a full-size model, which is impractical. So, I mean, for me, having that, I think, passion or to build a physical model, to have it actually in front of me and paint it, for me as a model maker, I mean, that makes more sense for me. But for film work, I mean, obviously CGI is the way to go because you can do much more with it. You can photograph it much easier and choreograph moves on and special effects and all that. But to use a physical model and have to lay a camera around that little model, it's not practical. You always want to think romantically, oh, it'd be great if we could go back to the old days of doing things like that. And in some cases, you probably can. You can probably still do some insert photography of miniature work if, you know, the model is big enough and of the quality that you need to do that. But I think days of the motion picture style 11-foot long model is gone, unfortunately.
It's a lot of space, isn't it, when you've got those big models? And you know, if you've got five ships or something, that's and you've got to put multiples on the screen at the same time, that's just not possible, is it?
And that the whole talent pool of people who did that is slowly dwindling too in Hollywood, so unfortunately.
Yeah, no, exactly. So most of your larger scale models are lit. So do you buy, do you do everything from scratch? Do you just have raw LEDs and you put everything in yourself? Or do you, do you buy some of the pre-made kits? Or so if you were to, I don't know, let's take Voyager, for example. Obviously, there are off-the-shelf kits for Voyager. Would you buy one or would you rather just do it from scratch?
I've always just built them by scratch. It's cheaper that way, for one thing. And then I never know what kind of lighting I'm going to need for the that kit. And usually the kits I've seen have been pretty sparse as far as what they offer. And even ones that are made by Polar Lights, you get like six lights and they're all pre-wired and some gigantic wire. It's, I got to shove this in the engine. It's like, you know, for someone who's never done any wiring or electronics, that's great. But I like to use very, very tiny. I think they're called micro SMDs, are about the size of a human hair.
they're tiny.
Itty bitty. For doing a small model, I mean, you can put that light anywhere you want. And you can buy them pre-made. You can buy them pre-wired. So I do is just connect them. But I just buy them by the bagful. And it's far easier just to do that than to buy a kit and be stuck with what you're given with the kit. So.
And is there any kind of computer control in there, or are you just using resistors to flicker?
No, there's an Arduino control board, which I program as well.
Right.
And they're like a little $10 Arduino mini board.
Yeah.
And that fits in most models. And I think it has up to 14 outputs. So I can have 14 different types of flashy lights and strobes and fades in and out and beacons. And I got several ones that just do the Bessard lights that spin or kind of modulate in the Bessards. And another one that's like a cascading light effect that goes up and down the sides of the chiller grills on the nacelles. And a lot of these are just off the shelf. You can buy these or find these effects on the Arduino web forums, and you just plug and play, and you can actually test them right on the model as you're programming it. And it's like, that looks pretty good. Change the color here and change the speed. And once you like what you want, you burn the board and off you go. And
I'm getting loads of ideas now, because about, I want to say 12, 13 years ago, I was bought the Revel Voyager kit, and it's been sat in a box under my bed for the last 12, 13 years. And I'm adamant that next year I'm going to build it and I'm going to fight it. So you might get some questions from me on paint colors and and everything else, but
like Bill, what you're saying there, I remember I bought an Enterprise A, I think it was from Star Trek 5 or Star Trek 6, one of the AMT kits, but it had a light kind of set up inside it as well, which me and my brother completely failed to do. But when we kind of got it close on, you know, working and to actually turn off the lights and turn it on and see a starship lit up with, you know, lights that they would have existed back in the 90s, I was there going, this is absolutely magical. So everything you're saying there, I'm half tempted to say straight away, Bill, can you make a ship for me? Because it just sounds absolutely glorious to kind of want to have something like that that lights up and just looks. It's like my wallpaper, my PC here next to me, is the Enterprise E, all lit up. And I'm there going, I'd love to have something like that as well. Because again, it adds a light to a model that a model wouldn't necessarily have.
Right. I mean, most models you have, like airplanes and cars and tanks and boats, they don't need lighting to be, you know, what they are. But the starship, since it lives in space and it's in dark, it really comes to life when you can see the cabin lights and you see the navigation lights strobing. And for me to build a model anymore and not put lights in, it's like a crime. It's like, I just want to build and paint it. It's like, no, you got to put lights in it. Because it cries out for, light me. And there's a certain size, you know. It becomes limited to what you can do because it's too small to put lights in it. And the Voyager is pretty close to being too small for me. I think the 1-1000, it's about 13 inches long and it's got 8 billion, you know, cabin windows and strobe lights all over it, but it can be done. It's just.
And Bill, taking out the ships that appeared on screen, then what is, again, I'm asking you the awful questions. What is your favorite design that you've ever done? You've ever gone, that is absolutely, that's the one I really love. Again, as I said, you have to discount now the ones that have been on TV because there probably might be a natural element to go for them. But is there one specifically that you say, that's the one I always love to look back at? And it might be the best looking one, but what's the one that you have in your memory most of saying, that's the one I really think back to and kind of smile when I think about it?
One of my designs or just anything you built?
Actually both. Yeah. One that you've designed and also anything that you've built.
Again, like the Endurance was one that I think always stands out to me as when I thought, this came out okay. I look back on it a lot and I go, I can't believe I made that. But all the ships I've built, you know, I look at it and I go, did I make that? Wow, that's a good looking ship. But you know, I'm not going to say that out loud. I just did, but I shouldn't because I'm not really the kind of guy who likes to toot my own horn. But you asked, so saying that one I liked a lot, you know.
Okay, so I was going to say, to bring things forward a little bit, obviously the Shangri-La then was obviously modified to then become the Titan/Enterprise-G.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right in thinking the Wasp was the inspiration for the Duderstadt class, or was that the
that's correct.
That is correct. So tell us through, so how did that come about? How was that through Doug Drexler, or was that an off the cuff thing that somebody just mentioned it, or so what happened there?
Well, I can go back a little bit and tell you what I was working on season two of Picard. Because it all starts from that being introduced. And I'm friends with John Eaves as well. And he had been forever trying to get me into Star Trek and had me put together a portfolio for the art director for season one of Picard, which I did. And of course, they didn't need me for that, for anything. But when season two rolled around, it was a whole new staff, new art director, Dave Blass. And he initially contacted me to build the ready room models for the Stargazers. And initially, you know, to build or rebuild Rick Sternbach's original Constellation class, the classic TNG Stargazer, which I built pretty much exactly the way Rick did, scratch build it using the same parts. And then and also build the new Stargazer, which Doug had designed with John Eaves and Dave Blass. And then they also asked me, hey, while you're building these, can you also design a predecessor of the Stargazer that would have been a TOS era ship? And I go, oh, now we're getting to design ships for Star Trek. Wow. And so I came up with some ideas on how to build, you know, what I thought would be a TOS version of the Stargazer. And they're like, that's great, do it. And so I did and built these things, had them gold plated and shipped off to California. And, you know, meanwhile, you know, Terry Metalis, the showrunner, you know, was a big fan of me, of my work from what I've been posting on Instagram. And they had actually had been really corresponding with me through Instagram, which is kind of odd, but I thought, okay, this works. Do we freeze? We're okay. Okay.
No, you're fine. You're still fine.
I was looking at a picture and you guys were like frozen. I go, uh-oh, we lost connection. All right. But Terry Metalis had actually bought a model for me that I had built just off the cuff. And, really liked the Shangri-La, and this was between season two and three, and he asked if he can buy the Shangri-La, and I had sold it to a friend and said, well, it's I don't have it, I sold it a couple years ago, but I can build you another one. So I started to build him another Shangri-La because I still had some of the old molds from the original. And then one day after season two had wrapped, Dave Blass found out that I had been working on his model for Terry. It was like a Saturday night. And he says, can you mock up the picture you showed of, I posted these on Instagram, or actually it might have been Facebook. I had the Shangri-La Mark II for Terry in primer, getting ready to paint it. And Dave's like, can we see what this looks like with the Picard era engines? I go, okay. And I had some extra engines from the Stargazers because they were the same era. So I photoshopped these engines on the photograph of the Shangri-La in primer and sent it off to him that night. And the next morning, an email from Dave saying, looks great, we're going with it. I'm like, going where?
Wait,
going
what?
What? Yeah, this was going to be the hero ship for season three. What? Really? I thought, Terry had kind of hinted, yeah, I might use a Shangri-La in the show. I'm thinking, yeah, there's a background ship, you know, behind Geordi on the desk somewhere. And just because I was thinking a practical model, and not to realize it was going to be, the design was going to be, you know, a visual effects model. And they're like, yeah, just send over the 3D files and we'll get this going into production. And I go, 3D files? What? I built this like 6-7 years ago. There's no 3D file. I hand built this, a scratch built. And I was leaving that Monday to go work on another film for like a month. And like, sorry, I can send you a bunch of photographs. So we had to bring Doug Drexler in, and he had to build this thing from scratch as a visual effects model from photographs I took of the physical model, and he had a week to do it. And I'm thinking, okay, it was a good start. And then I'm as I'm sitting in my hotel room in Colorado, I'm like sketching out ideas for the, you know, what I thought a 25th century ship might look like, beyond the fact that, you know, they basically just took my model and just changed the engines on it. It's 23rd century era ship, but it now has 25th century engines on it, but that's it. You go, well, do you want to change anything else? No, we're good. Because Terry liked the Shangri-La so well, just as it was. All he wanted to do was just change the engine. Like, okay, it's your ship, just your show.
Bill, you're like, we've spoken now for an hour. You're a very modest man. You're a very understated man. You're a very polite gentleman. When it kind of realization hits you that, oh my God, they're going to use my design for the main ship, was there a part of you that was inside just screaming, going,
yeah,
I was a kid growing up watching this, and now my design is going to be what everyone's going to see?
Right. But then you got this big NDA contract you signed. You can't tell anything. You can't tell somebody for like a year, 2 years. You know, and then I didn't know at the time it was going to be called Enterprise until like a year later, when the visual effects guys, you know, who are also fans and friends of mine, they're like, hey, Bill, you know what's going on with the Titan? I go, no, what? It's the Enterprise G. I'm like, what? And I couldn't tell anybody again for another year. But then the Intrepid, you know, that came about. That was another ship that Terry saw, that he saw the Wasp. And I was actually went back to that design. I was making a TOS version of it just for fun. I thought, Titan's done. Yeah, it's in production. They're done with me. And nope. There's a sketch I'm working on. I go, he goes, I have an idea for the ship. I go, oh, okay. It's just he and I just kind of back and forth, just chatting ideas back and forth on Instagram, you know, developing the Intrepid. And then Dave Blass emailed me and said, hey, I hear you're working on a ship with Terry. Can we have it? And thankfully, I had been doing this in 3D. So yes, here it is.
I've got the 3D file this time. Here you go.
Here's the file. Give it to Doug. And then he did his magic to it, and it became the Intrepid.
What 3D software do you use?
I was just working in SketchUp, which is what I had been using forever. It's a very simple, easy program.
Yep.
Kind of. But it's, you can't really do great stuff with it, but you can get the basic stuff down, like concept stuff in a rough format, to get you, you know, where you need to go as a concept model. It's a great tool, yeah. But you know, it's not something you want to use for visual effects for sure.
Bill, your story is kind of it's a completely inspiring story of like, follow your dreams, never kind of give up. And if an opportunity presents itself, you take it with both hands kind of thing. Like, it's just, I'm in awe of your story completely, because you've taken it completely in your stride. You haven't clearly let it get to you. And it just seems to be, you did your work. You did all your kind of your background stuff. You planned it out. You executed it. It was picked up by the right people. And now, you know, your work is part of Star Trek history.
It's unreal. I can't believe it sometimes that, you know, actually have gotten to that point where it's like, my ships are on TV. It's like, I never thought that would ever happen. You know, I'm perfectly happy with just building and designing my own universe, but to see it again on the big screen or the little screen, but it's just unreal. I can't force to describe it, but it's just.
It pretty much is the dream of most of us, isn't it? Is to, you know, somehow or another, actually to be part of Star Trek, and you've literally made the dream happen. So,
but all thanks to Terry and those guys and Dave for, you know, going to a fan and picking a design, you know, from a fan, They could have used any number of professional designers to design something for the show, but to, you know, deep dive into the fan base and pull the design out and use it for the show, that's unheard of, really, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah. She's dead right. Bill, I'm completely envious of you all. That's all I'll say anyway.
Yeah, well, me too. Well, okay then. So, Sho, is there anything else that you would like to ask before we look to wrap things up?
No, I said just, Bill, I just have to say that, like, for, you know, people like Mike and myself, in terms of what we do and things like that, you love the way we interact with the community, the way we interact with people, and the way we get to speak to someone like yourself. As I said, I wouldn't say, you know, I use the term inspiration quite a lot, but for you, you're an inspiration to the likes of me, to the likes of Mike, to the likes of so many other people who took his love of Star Trek, created something from it, and now as somebody who can say, I've actually made a significant, you know, say contribution to the world of Star Trek. So for that, for me, I just want to say thank you, and thank you for being inspiration for your story and what you've told us today.
Oh, thanks for having me here and asking these important questions about Star Trek. I think, you know, if I can inspire people, that's, you know, I feel my job is done, and because I've been inspired, and I feel I should just pass it on to those who find joy in this culture and this world of Star Trek that's, you know, been around for 50, 60 years and hopefully continue to grow. But never stop creating. I mean, this, I think what Star Trek has taught me is to, you know, is to create, whether it's costumes or music or models or starships. I mean, if it gives you joy, then you should do it. And I'm still creating, whether or not it'll ever be seen on TV or not. I don't care. I mean, that was just the icing on the cake. But
yeah, exactly. So as we look to wrap things up then, if somebody wanted to reach out to you, where's the best place for that to happen?
Well, I'm on Twitter or X, I'm not sure what you call it, Facebook and Instagram. I think I'm Admiral Buck.
Yep.
On Instagram, Buck Admiral on Twitter, and just Bill Krauss on Facebook.
Awesome. And you do take commissions for?
I am currently closed because my backlog is so long that I just can't say yes anymore. It's just because these things take months to build, and I have a list of like a dozen or more people waiting in line patiently for their project. So I just can't say yes anymore. I'd love to, but it's just me.
And Bill, the last question we have for you then is, and it's going to be a very easy one, it won't be too hard to answer, but what does Star Trek mean to you?
You said this was going to be an easy one.
I lied, Bill. It was never going to be an easy question.
Mean to me. It's just, it means hope for me. I mean, it's always meant this optimistic vision of the future that it gave, hopefully, it gives everybody. And that things can get better if we all work together and, you know, we work toward a common goal. If that's the future that, you know, you want to live in, you've got to work. That at least gives you a blueprint of where to go, rather than kind of like a bleak, you know, post-apocalyptic type of thing. You know, the Star Trek gives you that kind of vision of a future where we have succeeded and follow our dreams into the stars. So that's, to me, is what it gives me hope.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, Bill.
Sorry, it's
literally going to be, that was my answer if I ever got asked that question.
I'm patenting that.
Awesome. Well, Bill, thank you ever so much for being so generous with your time. It's really appreciated.
Thanks for having me.
No, brilliant. Thank you very much. And for everybody, let's have a great week ahead and live long and prosper.